House Committee on Student Achievement and School Accountability. And welcome, colleagues, and welcome to those of you in the audience. We have a public hearing today on House Bill 2462. And we have several people who have signed up to testify. I think, Lee, is it Leila? Leila, excuse me. Leila Ammon, Amy...
Firstman. I'm with you.
Schulderman?
Yes.
And Christy Wallace, are coming up in the group, I understand?
Yes.
Okay, come on up, please, and we'd like to hear from you.
How are you this morning?
Good. And before we start, we'll have Janet kind of bring us up to date here on...
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to point out to members in the packet that we routed to your offices yesterday afternoon. The fiscal impact statement has quite a bit of information about current funding, how many students are served. So that's where the real information about this particular bill is. It's an appropriation. There is federal money that goes to this program now. This would be an enhancement to that federal money. There's quite a bit of information in your fiscal impact statement. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, we'd just briefly like to make a statement. Amy Schulman has not arrived yet, but we're hoping she will be here at any time. Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, my name is Leila Mon, and I am the legislative associate for the Oregon Student Association. The Oregon Student Association has historically tackled barriers that hinder access to higher education, such as child care. Child care has long been a financial hurdle for students, parents in Oregon, and throughout the country. Without access to affordable, quality child care, many student parents are severely limited in their ability to attain a higher education. Many loans are taken out that far exceed tuition costs, while others are forced onto state welfare programs. Child care costs throughout the state are especially high in the areas where most of our universities are located, making it even more important to support the Child Care Block Grant as it increases students' options and ability to achieve academic and personal success. I'm just going to take a few minutes to give you a basic idea of what the cost for child care is for off-campus child care in the areas where our universities are located. These numbers are derived specifically from the 2000 Oregon Child Care Market Rate Study that was done by, it was prepared for the Adult and Family Services Division of Oregon by the Oregon State University Family Policy Program. This is a pretty in-depth report, so I'm just going to give you some basic background numbers. The average cost for off-campus, non-subsidized child care for our students at Southern Oregon, Western Oregon, Lane Community College, Oregon Health Sciences, Oregon State, and Portland State, and the University of Oregon averaged between $517 and $743 per month. Now, this is all non-subsidized, usually through a child care center or group home, the 743 being the highest for infants and the 517 being lower for preschoolers. There's a chart on the back of the statement that I have prepared for you today that just gives a brief overview of the cost. For our students in more rural regions, for example at OIT or Eastern, the cost is less, averaging between $385 and $475. Our research found that child care costs are on average higher in the areas where most of these universities are located. Most universities in our system offer some type of child care on campus that offers students a subsidized rate that is funded, in most cases, primarily by student incidental fees. For example, at Portland State University, they offer students full-time child care of approximately $300 per month. Is significantly lower than the off-campus non-subsidized care that they would be subjected to had they not had this option. The money from those subsidies, as I mentioned, comes from student incidental fees. And for example, at the U of O and Portland State, the average is about 10% of the total student incidental fee budget going towards child care. So we see a lot of students helping other students get into child care. This is a significant portion of the student fee budget at all these schools, but it addresses a serious need for students who do not receive the Child Care Block Grant. Without this option, even more students would be paying the market rate for these care facilities. At this time, I'd be happy to take any questions if the committee has anything to ask of me about that.
And a major problem is there simply are more students who seek this service than there is money to support that service. Is that what we're saying?
Absolutely, Mr. Chairman. Mm-hmm. And we see that on the average, we have a wait list for the block grant of about 936 students, and only 250 are being served at the moment. With the bill that, with the House Bill 2462, that would allot $3.9 million and would cover about 400 students. Even still, with the subsidized child care centers that we have on campus, there's a great waiting list for the students who are waiting to get into those services as well.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Mrs. Amon. Am I pronouncing it correctly?
Amon.
Get the accent right. what other creative ways could we take care of this problem?
Well, I think that there are a number of ways that we could look at this issue. Students, I think, through the incidental fee budget, have really been able to creatively attack this problem by allotting more money to that issue, by subsidizing child care. I think that there are a number of ways that students through the child care block grant would be able to receive child care. And it's a good question, Representative Nelson. I would like to look further into that and maybe get back to you on some better ideas, maybe talk to some of our students as to what they feel would be better alternatives. I'd really like to get that information to you at some time.
Thank you very much. So follow up, Mr.
Follow
Chair.
Up.
For example, I'm thinking of, programs like pooling, sharing in this child care with other students, those type of activities, perhaps working with school, public school systems, and helping. It's a great way for high school students to learn child care and babysitting and, other, relative concepts. And so I just wondered if we could maybe consider some of those. I appreciate hearing back from you.
Mr. Chair, Representative Nelson, I think that's an excellent idea, and I will certainly look into that.
Ladies, we have represented Jackie Winters, who has come in the room, and she doesn't have a lot of time, so if it's okay with you, hopefully it is, we will bring her up and have her testify. So, Representative Winters, come on up, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you for allowing me to join you. My name is Jackie Winters, and I'm representing District 31. And I came, and I am in a committee right next door, and so I asked my staff to pull me out so I could come and be with you this morning. Just to give you a few highlights on why I introduced 2462, those of you who were with me last session know that we introduced this the last session, and we were not able to get it to move. We got it through committee, and that's as far as we got the bill, and I believe we got it to Ways and Means. The situation this session is no different than it was last session. Presently, there are only 250 slots available for child care to post and secondary students. The general fund does not provide any support at all. These are federal funds, not state. The type of assistance is paid directly to child care providers, along with co-payments from the parents. And I want you to think about the signals that we have sent to students and think about the magnitude that I think that exists there. Only 22% of families eligible to receive post-secondary child care assistance are receiving it. That means over 900 families are waiting to receive help. The average wait time, and it's lengthened since last session because I believe it was 12 months in, now we're at 15 months. And those families who are waiting have some tough decisions to make. It's a decision between tuition and child care. Not only do I believe that House Bill 2462 is an investment in these families, I believe it's also in line with the governor's early childhood development plan. When we talk about children and we talk about families, we ha- issued policy in this state that says that we want the individuals to become self-sustaining, self-supporting, and that is very laudable, and I think we need to try to obtain that. But when you are a student and you have a child, you know, you have the situation of, do I continue my education or do I drop my education, because some of them cannot afford both the child care as well as the tuition. They came to me last session and asked if I would sponsor and assist them, and I told them yes, and I'm back again here this session. And I believe that you have an opportunity to do something meaningful by passing out this bill for them. And I think we also need to send a message that we do support families and we do support students who have children that are in college. I'm not going to take up any more of your time, but it is one that I think fits within the policy of what we're all trying to seek, and that is that we have a workforce that is able to earn a higher living, and certainly that is what the goals of these students, and that they're able to take care of their children in the process of going through. I know as a parent myself, if I'm having to leave my child and I'm having to worry about that child, then I don't do quite as well as if I'm assured that they're taken care of. I've had some discussion with the various universities, and I think that there's an opportunity there for them to look at, you know, some of them do have child care on the premises, but I think that they can look at the expansion and maybe we can look at ways that we can make it a lot more user-friendly. With that, I'm open for any questions that you may have.
Questions, Mr. Chair?
Representative Starr had asked earlier. Representative?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Winters, for bringing this bill. I'm surprised at myself how this has affected me. I didn't expect this to happen to me. As important it is that parents get an education, it's really the kids that are sitting here this morning that are the lives that are at risk. And so I just want to say I appreciate you bringing the bill forward. And there is some way that we can fund this program. I think it's important. So thank you.
Thank you. Representative Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Winters. This has a subsequent referral to Ways and Means Human Resources, of which you are on that committee. Do you have a plan?
At this point, no. It's probably one of the toughest positions for me to be in. As most of you know, finding dollars is going to be my task. You know, I say that I'm down in the bowels of where all the numbers are, and I'm going home seeing numbers in my head.
Okay, well, we'll have to trust that maybe I will have to trust that you can find something.
I'm certainly going to look hard.
Oh, okay.
Representative Barnhart.
Thank you, and thank you, Representative Winters, for bringing this bill. I guess my question is really a kind of a follow-up, and that is, as I understand it, this bill would cover about half of the current waiting list. How did you settle on an amount that would cover half of the waiting list rather than going for the whole thing or something more, or I'm just sort of interested in your thought process.
Well, actually, we thought that we would just replay what we did last session,
okay.
And that was the amount that we requested last session, and we were not able to get it through last session. You should also know that I am working with Congresswoman Darlene Hooley, because she's working on the federal level to apply to assist us, so it's, you know, it's collaboration with the two of us that are trying to see how much revenue of what we can bring into the state.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Representative Nolan.
Representative Winters, I don't have the opportunity to serve on that subcommittee with you, but I would be delighted to help you comb through the budget and find a way to fund this budget, this particular proposal, because it's important. I'd also suggest that it might be effective to use, once we succeed, and I think with your determination we will, in finding the state money to provide half the funding, we ought to put that out as a challenge grant to the business community, ask them to come up with the money to fund the other half of the waiting list. And I'll work with you to make that happen, too.
Well, I appreciate your offer and your help.
That's a great idea.
Excellent. Representative Nelson.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair and Representative Winters. Of course, this is very important, and I can certainly identify with this need. We've discussed the duplicate services that are available through different agencies throughout state government. And is there any possibility that we could combine this child care with the availability of other programs in the areas of the universities, perhaps sharing, you know, half of the cost? Or can we work with the seniors in some type of, you know, grandmothering and grandfathering, which is wonderful for all children, or the high schools in their learning child care? Are there some programs we could have some joint participation with agencies and other schools?
Currently, Representative Nelson, in child care, you already get some of those mixes in which you alluded to. The issue here is simply the dollars not available to provide for the students. We do have child care that's available through Adult and Family Services, and some of the other agencies. We have child care at YW. We do have, you know, in some communities where you do have the partnership between private and public. You know, there's all kinds of vehicles out there in the community. But what isn't available is for this group of individuals who have are at an income at a level where they don't qualify either for AFS or some of the other programs, and yet they are students in our university system who are trying to make their lives better. And so they don't quite fit in all these other categories that we're talking about out there. And they have been wrestling with this issue for a number of years. This is not their first session. I believe it's about your third or fourth, that's correct. And so and somehow we just have not gotten there. But there are those mixes that you allude to that are out there.
Please, Mr. Chair and Representative Winters, are the majority of these students needing help? Are they full-time employed, part-time employed? What is the...
I'll defer to the students.
Okay.
I think typically, Representative Nelson, Mr. Chair, typically students are employed and working at least on a part-time basis. We do find that there are students who do work a great deal or have spouses or other system as well working, but you do find that students are trying to work to help subsidize that child care.
Mr. Chair.
Follow up.
Yes, sir. Thank you. And Ms. Amon? Would we know an average income? I know it doesn't fit all students, but I'm wondering what this level is.
Not off the top of my head, Representative Nelson, but that is something that I could find out for you.
Thank you. And the number who are working part-time and full-time that are getting this.
Okay.
I think that really shows they're giving it up their all, so.
I don't know whether the student shared with you earlier, but they do pay. There is a copay for them, and they pay 25% of of the cost.
They do. If I may, Mr. Chairman, Representative Nelson, defer the rest of that question to our senior, Kristen Wallace. I think she might be able to give us some personal knowledge on that.
Okay. Representative
Mr. Chair, if there's no further questions of the panel, of the committee, then I will go back to my committee. And I thank you so much for allowing me to testify. And I thank you for allowing me to join you this morning.
And in turn, Representative Winters, we're pleased you could come in. And we thank you.
Okay. Representative Nelson, I'd just like to say that I work two jobs. I'm a mom.
Excuse me, Amy, did you state your name?
Yes, I'm Kristen Wallace. And also, I think it's beyond, it's also about quality of care. It's beyond access, it's about quality.
Sorry.
It's about quality of care. I know that it's also about access, but we need to feel like we can put our children in a place where we're safe, where they're safe. Also, I think having subsidized programs based on your income and having a sliding scale.
And here's the last part, I'm sorry.
Having a sliding scale and having basically subsidized programs based on income.
Okay,
Well, thank you very much.
Kristen, have you completed what you'd like to say?
No, actually, I have testimony to read to you.
Please, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Okay. Mr. Chair and members of the committee, I'm Kristen Wallace. I'm a student at Portland State University. Imagine being in the seventh grade, playing baseball and enjoying your youth. Imagine that seventh grader pregnant, a child, then advancing a grade because it's the only place for her to go. She graduates high school, and a year later, a year ahead of her class with a college, 1 year of college under her belt. Now I'm here. This story is mine, and this is my testimony. For a moment, take a lens and examine my life. You know my history, some, but not the details. Like being scared last month about financing my four-year-old daughter's birthday. Or how about after 4 months of my daughter begging to go to ballet, still our finances won't permit this. I pay more for childcare than I do rent. I work two jobs. I went to Lola Lofton, our student parent advocate, and she told me that the wait list would be a year and a half. A year and a half is too long to wait. I cannot wait to get my education. I cannot halt building a better future. And I won't stop now. What this block would give us is a future, stability, and a chance, meaning my daughter and I have time to read more, sing more, and meaning earning good grades to get into grad school. It means maybe someday to get ballet slippers and have a reason to dance. I won't allow myself to fall victim to my circumstances. I have our future to mold an example to be. This bill is about giving the less advantaged a chance to succeed and for our children to have a strong foundation to propel from. The allocation of $3.9 million to HB 2462 would change the life and me of that little girl sitting in the floor. There are 900 families, and there are 900 faces on each application, each of a testimony of their own, and I'm one of 900. Okay.
Thank you. Any questions? Well, we thank you for your testimony, and it was obviously from the heart, very moving, and we appreciate that. Thank you, and we also have signed up Sarah DeVore and Dennis Reynolds.
Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you.
Good morning, Chairman Beckman and members of the committee. My name is Sarah DeVore, and I attend the University of Oregon. This is my first time in Salem and my first time ever speaking like this, so I'm really nervous. Bear with me. I have a hard time telling you my story as if I am someone to pity and is begging for help. I am not a weak person. I'm supported. My support system is made up of strong people like me. Each and every day I interact mostly with single mothers who are doing the same thing, if not more than me. These are not weak people. They work hard each and every day to make a difference for themselves and their families. They should be proud. Yet I have also seen some of these women forced out of college, unable to support their families while going to school, and many of them are now a part of the system and will continue to be dependent on the system. I am the non-traditional student advocate in the student government at the University of Oregon, so I am here representing all 2,000 student parents who couldn't be here due to midterms or family conflict. I'm in my second year at the UVO and will be graduating in the fall term with a degree in family human services, and I plan to go on to graduate school to get my master's in social work. As some of you may know, being a parent is a job. And for me, this means taking care of four-year-old Gavin. I had attended college previously but was not focused. When I became a parent, I realized the importance of an education, which I must say is a common theme among student parents. I cherish the challenge of being a parent and a student, and am proud of the work I do. I am lucky that I have a great extended family support system, but the cost of childcare, rent, school, and all the other bills that come up can really add up. I do receive financial aid and am already $18,000 in debt, and by the time I graduate, I will owe nearly twice that much. Recently, I had to take a part-time job just to pay for the cost of childcare. My choices for additional funding are limited because financial aid left me short at the end of each term, and my parents, who were helping me before, just couldn't do it anymore. I've jumped through all the hoops to try and receive child support, but I still can't get that, which is another common theme among my circle of single parents. In light of the dual financial burden of school and childcare, I was encouraged by my AFS worker to join the Welfare to Work program. She said that way they could help pay for my childcare at least while I was working. This didn't make any sense to me because the minimum wage money I would receive would barely be enough to cover the childcare expenses while in part-time school. Nor does it make sense for me to extend this cost over 5 years when I could attend full-time, finish in 2 years, and enter the workforce. What seems a little more practical to me is if the state helps families get off the system, then we could start contributing to the system and stop taking from it. I really am not one to complain to you all about the lifestyle I have chosen as a parent and working student because I'm very proud of what I'm doing. I love going to school and I love being a mother. I do think people who choose to have families before higher education shouldn't be shut out of higher ed when they actually make some of the best students. It takes starting a family for a lot of people to appreciate the importance of education and a degree. What I do want y'all to know is that student parents are dedicated students, and any state assistance for childcare would increase the accessibility of education to parents and provide a strong investment in Oregon families. Thank you very much for giving me the time to tell my personal story on an issue that is very personal to me. Please support House Bill 2462. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Very good. Dennis.
Chairman Backlund, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to be here, and I mean that as a sincere thanks. Thanks for hearing these folks. My name is Dennis Reynolds, and I'm an early childhood educator, a program administrator in higher education, former member of the Oregon Commission for Child Care, and I currently serve as chair of the Adult and Family Services Student Block Grant Advisory Committee. In my capacity as director of the Child Care and Development Centers at the University of Oregon, I see families in similar circumstances to those who you will hear from today. They are not alone. There are more. LaTanya, co-chair of our parent council, who couldn't be here today because at 8:20 she needed to get her son on the bus to kindergarten. By 9 o'clock, her daughter needed to be in child care, and she had a midterm exam to take. You know, another one that came to mind who was going to try to be here today is Amanda, who her and her husband David are both students at the University of Oregon, both working part-time and juggling the schedules for their infant son and their four-year-old daughter as they attempt to complete their education. We'll share that we have an estimated 2,000 students at the University of Oregon alone who are parents. Unfortunately, that's only an estimate because to date the Oregon University system doesn't tabulate parenting status and or the age of children, which those of us who try to administer programs wish that information was available. So you will hear estimates about need because the figures are not solid. And what these students are accomplishing is amazing. In 1989, the Oregon legislature established a pilot program for student child care assistance, and I had the opportunity to be in a similar hearing during that session. And two of the parents who came to that hearing, I have had the knowledge of where they've ended up. One, Carmel, is an attorney in private practice here in Salem, who is a single parent. A mom made it through her program with child care assistance as an undergrad and was admitted to the University of Oregon Law School. Another is a friend who became a friend of mine, a woman named Priscilla, who was working as the permanency planning caseworker for services to children and families in Coos County on the completion of her MSW. Believe me, I don't know why she would want to take such a job in terms of what that means in some of the most difficult family situations in this state. Those are the graduates from the pilot program and the federal pieces that have been there in terms of this kind of assistance. I also had the opportunity to know those women's children. And those children have demonstrated the two-for-one payoff that comes from funding student child care. I know Priscilla's daughter, who graduated with honors from Marshfield High School, and is continuing higher education herself. I don't have the current knowledge of Carmel's kids, but I knew them when they were entering elementary school, and they were bright, vivacious kids because their moms were not forced to make choices between their own education and quality experiences for their children. In the university system, there are a number of collaborations and partnerships currently in place to try to fill the many gaps that this need creates. One of the child care centers at the University of Oregon is a cooperative where parents work within classroom in an attempt to reduce their child care costs. That same co-op and our centers place students who are doing community placements from South Eugene High School and Roosevelt Middle School. We also are fortunate at the University of Oregon to be a recipient of a federal grant called the Campus Grant. Child care access means parents in school. Which is allocated for the next federal budget of $25 million state nationwide. You folks know numbers. $25 million nationwide doesn't go very far. At the University of Oregon, we're receiving a little over $50,000 a year, and what that does is mean 15 families get 75% of the child care costs paid for them, and in a collaborative arrangement with Lane County Head Start, they get comprehensive social services, mental health, medical, et cetera, from Head Start. So we are working to stretch the monies that are currently available. And the reality is those funding pieces are too small. That's why there is a proposal before you now to expand that assistance, to be able to, you know, reduce those waiting lists, to be able to look not only at students who are in four-year training programs, but students in two-year training programs, or students who are trying to access higher employment, wage jobs, even in short-term training. Because right now, a one-year waiting list says if you want to do a one-year training program, that's probably not going to be an option for you. So I urge you to take a careful look at this legislation and give it your support.
Thank you. Mr. Chair. Yes, Representative Morissette.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Reynolds, are you... familiar with the figures on the back of a sheet that was given?
Probably generally, but I'm not as familiar with the sheet specifically.
The cost under column A for infant, toddler, and preschool is much higher than the cost in B and C. And I was just wondering if you could address the accuracy of these figures and why there are differences.
Yes. I mean, I am familiar. Somebody just handed me a copy, so I got a quick look of what these are. These are figures pulled from Adult and Family Services market rate surveys, where they establish what are the market rates in different areas within the state. And the reality is the average cost of care in Eastern Oregon in Klamath Falls is significantly lower than the average cost of care in the Willamette Valley. A lot of that is simply market factors in terms of how many job options exist for you in the Willamette Valley or in Beaverton, for example, as compared to may exist in Klamath Falls. So child care providers, organizations like the one I administer, have to pay our staff more, and that's reflected in higher cost to parents. Also, in smaller communities, there's a higher preponderance of family child care and less center-based care. And that family child care is typically lower cost. So that would explain the differences in cost in different parts of the state.
Okay. Representative Barnhart.
Just to follow up, if I may, you might explain what family child care is, because I think the name is poorly chosen.
Family child care is, in essence, people who are operating small businesses, child care businesses, out of their own home, caring for 10 children or fewer. And including their own children, and are registered with the state and are listed with Adult and Family Services. The only regulation of those folks is a criminal history record check and, like I said, a registration process. We know they're out there.
Thank you very much. Marcia Kelly, come up, please.
Chair Backlund and members of the committee,
the record, my name is Marcia Kelly, and I am here on behalf of the Women's Rights Coalition to testify in favor of 2462. I appreciate the opportunity to speak to you today on this bill. The Women's Rights Coalition is a statewide private nonprofit organization comprised of a number of organizations, including the Oregon Women's Political Caucus, the Elder Women's League, the National Organization of Women, and the American Association of University Women. We also have individual members. Our concern is for both the present and the future citizens of this state. We feel this bill is important for our collective future as well as the individual futures of the persons this bill would touch. For parents, safe and affordable child care is difficult. For students getting an education, being a parent, and trying to pay for quality child care, the challenges are magnified. While many students work part-time, unless they qualify for the scarce campus aid or block grants, options are limited. We can cite the same reasons for support as the other people here testifying. We're not going to do that because they have given you those reasons. Our concern is students who, in order to finance child care, take out loans to pay for that child care. That adds to the burden of the loans they most likely have incurred just paying for tuition and books. At the current approximate rate of about $4,600 per year per student, this would add over $18,000 to the loan repayment calculated if you're going for a four-year degree. So when the graduate gets out, they have more debt and, more likely, additional child care needs. Funding block grant child care at $3.9 million would allow already struggling students to get their education and become self-sufficient. It would allow them to stay in the educational system and not the welfare system. When they achieve their degree, they would be adding to the tax rolls and not taking from the welfare rolls. Thank you again, and I hope you support House Bill 2462.
Thank you, Marcia. Questions? Okay, thank you. We also have Billy Dalto signed up, and Amy Shoreland, who was called earlier and is now here. Come up, please. Amy, you got here first. Why don't you begin?
I apologize for being late. It was one of those parent mornings. My four-year-old little, my boy will be four next month, and he has not been feeling well. So we were up very late last night, and so I again apologize for being late. For the record, my name is Amy Schollerman. I'm a student parent out at Western Oregon University. You've heard from other student parents this morning. You've heard the facts and the figures. I just want to tell you a little bit about my story. I am a first-generation college student. I will be the first person on my father's side of the family ever to graduate from the university with a four-year degree. That will happen this June. That is without any state assistance. I got pregnant during July of 1996, just after my senior year of high school, to someone I thought I was in love with, and that arrangement ended up not working out in December, 1 week before we were supposed to be married. He decided he didn't want to be married. I've been attending a community college, and I was receiving every grant possible. I was working at least 25 to 30 hours a week while I lived with my parents. My parents both worked, so they were unable to help with my child care. Between working and the grants that I received, I was able to graduate from the community college with no loans.
All right.
So I was very happy about that. But much to my dismay, when I transferred to Western Oregon University to complete my four-year degree, during my first year there, I had to take out over $10,000 in loans just to help with my child care costs. I pay more in child care than I do in tuition per term. My son started out in a home daycare during my first year out at Western, and since then he has been at our child care center on campus. When I was pregnant, I called our local AFS branch to find out what help was available to me as a single parent and trying to go to school. And at that time, the student block grant was administered by on a county basis. And for our county, the waiting list was 3 to 5 years, and I was told not to bother putting my name on the list, and that if I really wanted state assistance, I should drop out of school and go on welfare. I hung up the phone on that. The person that I was talking to at AFS, and I just burst into tears. I love the state of Oregon. I've lived here since I was born. I'm a native Oregonian. And during the one time that I needed help, the state wasn't there for me. And I was so disheartened at just barely 18, going on 19, to know that my state was taking no personal investment in my future, and so that I could in turn put back into the state that I love so much. I, because of this, I stopped voting. I stopped becoming involved in any other civic activities because I was so upset. During the 1999 legislative session, I once again became involved in politics because of the student block grant. I was approached by someone who sat on the board of the Oregon Student Association at that time, and she was telling me that the Student Association was working on this child care block grant, and would I be willing to come to their lobby day to speak on these subjects and tell my story. And once again, I burst into tears, this time because there were traditional students who were taking an investment and who had no personal reasons to be doing this, to help students like myself get through school without having to take out astronomical amounts of loans just to pay for their child care. I immediately signed up. I was the first person on their sign-up list, and since then I've been involved, and I'm so proud of the work that we do as a student association. And my son is so proud of the work that I do as a parent. He loves going to my office with me. I now sit on the board of directors for the Student Association. He came with me yesterday morning to the Capitol to a breakfast meeting because his daycare doesn't open up until 7:30, and the meeting started at 7:30. I'm sure he will be a familiar face by the end of this session. And I just want to strongly encourage you to support this House bill because it is such an important program, and there are so many students out there like myself, like the other students you've heard today, who would benefit from this program. Thank you.
Thank you. Billy.
Good morning. For the record, my name is Billy Dalto. I live in Salem. I have no children. I'm a graduate of Willamette University. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, we've heard some powerful testimony this morning about the personal experiences of families struggling to deal with the issue of child care. Mr. Chair, members, I feel compelled to testify this morning because we need to send a message to students trying to make a better lives for their families. Let's send a message that the people of Oregon support you. We support your efforts to brighten the future of every member of your family. Finally, I wanted to respectfully reiterate the point that the passage of House Bill 2462 is an investment in Oregon's future. There's a proven correlation between higher education and higher wages. Higher wages mean that families will be less dependent on social services and greater contributors to Oregon's tax revenue system. That's all I have to say, but I wanted to make that point. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anyone else who would like to come up? Please, come up.
Was this a wire?
My name is Emily Easley. I'm a student at Portland State University, and I am one of the traditional students that Amy talked about in her testimony, but I am a success story that shouldn't be here. My mother was a single parent with two children. She worked full-time and tried to go to school, but in her second year had to drop out because she couldn't pay for tuition and the cost of living for our family. And as I heard Kristen speak, I thought of all of the student parents that I watch every day as I work with our student government in trying to rally students around this bill. I thought of one of my best friends who has a three-year-old and who is already $20,000 in debt. And I thought of my mother, who now works a minimum wage job and is not able to help with my tuition. I am lucky because I don't have children and can support myself, but I urge you to consider the testimonies that you've heard today and fund this bill so that we can have a lot more success stories. Thank you.
Thank you. Yes.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members. I'll be very brief today. For the record, my name is Mark Overbeck, and I am the interim executive officer with the Oregon Commission for Child Care, your advisory body and the governor's advisory body on child care issues around the state. You've heard much compelling testimony today. I just want to add our voice to the record as well. The commission has set out a vision that by the year 2010, all Oregon families will have access to safe, quality, and affordable child care, and we see House Bill 2462 as an important step toward that vision. We understand that you and your colleagues face difficult budget choices. It's always daunting when you come in to a legislative session and you find that there's a shortfall in terms of just what you've been doing. Our position is that quality child care in Oregon means a quality future for Oregon. And if we are to turn the cycle around, if we are to reduce the amount of money that we as a state spend on remediation at the back end, we believe that investing at the front end in quality child care is the best decision we can make. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Questions? Thank you all for testifying. We're going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2462, and we'll open a work session on House Bill 2462. Did I go too early?
I wanted to speak on this.
We'll reopen the public hearing on House Bill 2462.
I wasn't actually going to speak, but I felt that I should. My name is Marlene Johnston. Most people know me as Bar. I'm student body president at Portland State University. I'm a non-traditional student. I'm a returning woman student. I'm also a student of color, and I have a 3.5-year-old son that I love wildly, and I want to see him get the best possible care. And I took 10 years off of school, and I decided to go back because I was pregnant, and it made sense to me. How was I going to provide for my son's future? How was I going to help my mom when she gets older and needs care? So I looked at a lot of issues and helped with a lot of help from my mother. Fortunately, I'm very lucky to have a very supportive mother who helps me take care of my son on the days that he can't go to daycare. And because I receive a grant through, it's a diversity scholarship, I'm able to afford childcare for my son at the Helen Gordon Center. And I don't currently receive the block grant. And I know I rally troops. I rally parents. That's what I do. I care about childcare. I'm also an Oregon Student Association board member. I took my son to a board meeting in Eastern Oregon for a weekend. And by the end of the board meeting, everybody was like, yeah, we got to work on childcare. You know, I'm a I'm a geology major. I take chemistry, I take calculus. I take these hard classes. You know, it's hard to study when you need your attention. Care is very important. It's a funny thing to put yourself out there and say, yeah, I'm a mom, this is my son, care about our issue. But it really is an investment. It's an investment in people that are going to go in, you know, to the workforce and pay their taxes. They're gonna have, Miles sees me studying. It's normal to him to, like, drag out a chemistry book at reading time. It's normal for him to see that, and it's such a healthy place for him to be, to see me studying. So, I implore you to do what you can. I know everyone does what they can, but really, do what you can to make this happen. It's very important to children. It's important to families, and it does make a difference. So thank you.
Thank you. Yes. Yes, come up, please.
Mr. Chairman, committee members, my name is Claire Robertson. I'm a student at Lane Community College in Eugene, Oregon. I sit on both Oregon Student Association Board and the Oregon Community College Student Association Board. This is a legislative priority for both of both boards. I would like to speak to you about my four-year-old godson. His parents are both students. One is at the University of Oregon, and one is at Lane Community College with me. The mother works from 3 in the morning until 7 in the morning. She then goes home to spend a couple hours with her son before he goes to school, and then she goes to the university and takes classes. The father participates in the son's classroom, as well as attending Lane Community College at night to finish up his high school degree. The reason he became motivated to finish his high school degree was the day that his son was born. He cried, realizing that his child was going to grow up and his father wasn't going to even have an education himself. These two people work very, very hard. The father works nights, the mother works early mornings, and they do this so that not only can they get an education, but they can set a good example for their son and still spend some quality time during the day with him. So as a community college student, as a traditional student, I please ask all of you to support this bill for all of the student parents out there. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, I think we'll try again. With that, then, we'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2462 and open the work session on House Bill 2462.
Do we have discussion?
Discussion.
Mr. Starr.
Yes, Representative Starr.
I move House Bill 2462 with the due pass recommendation.
Representative Starr moves House Bill 2462. With a due pass recommendation to the Ways and Means Committee.
Right.
Discussion.
I have one comment.
Representative Smith.
I just have one comment. I'm going to support this and vote yes that it be passed to Ways and Means. I don't know whether they can find the money or not. I just hope that the students who are in the audience today, through their education and the experiences they've learned, would encourage and teach their own children to grow up and get an education and then possibly embark on having a family. That's the best thing that you can do.
I get to, excuse me, Representative Hobson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to concur with Representative Smith. Just because I had to go testify in another committee does not mean that I'm not aware of this issue and very sympathetic. But I would also offer, and I know you've heard this before, where the short budget makes it real difficult. So I, too, will support it going to Ways and Means, but I think we'll have to see how it jiggles through the process. Thank you.
Thank you. I guess as a chair, I've been thinking all morning what I might say at this point. And it is true that we have been told, all of us, that the budget is very tight, and this particular budget amount, $3.9 million, is not in the governor's recommended budget, nor was it in the co-chair's budget. On the other hand, Vice Chair Smith and Hobson and I and met with Janet Atkins, our committee administrator, yesterday. We do this weekly. And we concurred that if we just do nothing, there will be no movement on anything. If we believe this is an important measure, an important bill, and we say, well, there's no reason to move it on because there's no money, it would never have a chance. And so I'm sure we're all going to vote to move this on. We're going to ask Ways and Means to work very hard to find this money. Some monies have been discovered as the budgets have been analyzed. And so we can only hope that that would be the case for this bill. I'm not sure my editorial was worth the several seconds it took, but I felt I wanted to say it, and so I get to do that.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Zahner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm blessed with 10 grandkids, and my four kids were fortunate enough to all get through college and marry before they had their families, and I can't imagine the struggle that you girls go through, and I just want to say God bless you for dedicating your life to those children, because that's what you've done, and that's a good part of the world. That's what you should do, and trust me, you will be rewarded someday for that dedication that you're giving to your children, as I am blessed with my grandkids. My oldest is 10 years old, and I have 10 of them. So they're all in that age bracket, and God, what a blessing. They just light up my life. So I want to thank you girls for that, and I'll support it. And I'll make the comment that there's the lottery spends $4.5 million every year just advertising the lottery, and I'm trying to get that money out. And this would be a great program to get that out. I don't know how to do that because the lottery is an entity all by itself, but I don't think we need to advertise that we can gamble anymore. Everybody knows that. So I think maybe we can do that, and we'll all try to do that. And I'll work as hard as I can with the rest of the committee to help there. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. We have a motion on the floor. Paula, would you call the roll, please?
Aye.
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 Aye. House Bill 2462 passes and moves on to the Ways and Means Committee. Thank you all very much.
Thank you.
We need a carrier. Excuse me. We need a carrier. Oh, excuse me. We don't need a carrier. Thank you, Janet.
I'd love to carry it.
I know.
Bruce and I will go together if they need carriers. I think Jackie probably wants to carry.
Yeah, you're probably right. We'll open a public hearing on House Bill 2327. And we have the privilege of hearing from Representative Jeff Krupp. Yeah. And while Representative Krupp is making his way forward, we'll have Janet explain the bill, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House Bill 2327 is a tax credit bill that would provide an income tax credit for up to 50% of charitable contributions to public and private, either elementary or secondary schools, community colleges, and to public or private nonprofit colleges or universities. There are limits on the amount of the tax credit as well as some information in the bill about the Department of Revenue passing rules to substantiate the claims for the credit. The credit would first apply in tax years beginning in January 1st, 2002. The limit in the bill is for the credit to be not more than $1,000 for corporate filers, $500 for married joint filers, $250 for individual filers or married persons filing individually. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Krupp.
Representative Krupp, you may begin whenever you're ready.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As always, it's a pleasure to see all of you, members of the committee. I'm State Representative Jeff Krupp, District 37. This bill actually is a bill that I had introduced last session at the request of a gentleman who is the president of a local community schools foundation in Lebanon called the Lebanon Community Schools Foundation. And he is a CPA and thought that it would be wise for us to offer in the state tax credits for individuals to help schools. And so we ran that bill out last session, and the numbers were changed substantially, and ultimately, if I recall, it was added into a bill that never made it through the Senate. So we are back with this concept again, and basically what we're talking about, as you read the bill, is an opportunity for individuals, corporations, to contribute money to schools or foundations set up for the purposes of facilitating schools. Now, there is a misconception. As I was outside the room, a gentleman who lobbies in the educational arena said this is a bad bill because it funds private schools. While I disagree with that concept, this bill does not fund private schools. It funds a private nonprofit school that is registered under ORS 345, 505 through 575. And if you read that, you will see that that is private technical career and vocational rehabilitation schools. Okay. I wanted to make sure that because I was told that the committee was under the other impression. So I wanted to be sure that we covered that area immediately here. While I do believe there is a place for funding of private schools, That includes private religious schools, and the Oregon Constitution does not allow that. So aside from the political debate on that issue, it is also unconstitutional. Without a constitutional amendment, there would be no way to include that. I still think it is a valid opportunity that we allow individuals who want to take a portion of their wealth and give them an incentive to give it for the purposes of education and all types of education, whether it's K through 12 or clear up into the adult years when one may be changing your occupation, sometimes not of your own free will. And I hearken back to my experience as a farmer and in the natural resource industries and areas that I represent, a sweet home in Lebanon, where because of the spotted owl crisis, so many, many people that had spent 20, 30 years working in mills were now unemployed and were having great difficulty in changing their lives by finding the resources to be retrained into a new occupation. So I felt it is a valid idea to bring this forward again and offer an incentive through tax credits on your income tax to facilitate these kinds of issues. I am, however, also painfully aware, as we all are, of the budget situation that we are facing. The bill applies to tax years beginning after January 1, 2002. The fiscal impact would, of course, be to a lesser degree than if one were to have made it retroactive. My guess is, in reality, members, that probably for us to make this policy, we would need to have to consider deferring it until after the 2001-2003 biennium. So I think it is a worthwhile policy discussion that we have, and would be more than happy to answer any questions that the panel might wish to ask of me.
Representative Barnhart.
Thank you, Representative Krupp. I was looking at the section that sort of goes from page 1 to page 2, subsection 4. If I read that correctly, this would allow a person to get a tax credit on an amount of contribution, but not a deduction at the same tax deduction at the same time. Is it contemplated, as you understand the bill, that a person could give an amount greater than the amount that would be applied toward the credit and would be allowed to make a deduction based on the additional amount?
Mr. Chairman and Representative Barnhart, no, that is not my intention legislatively with this this situation. If that is the case, I would prefer to remedy that if that's a proper policy direction for the bill. And if the committee has a different idea on that, I really think that it ought to be one or the other, a tax credit or if the current law allowed, and there is a there only currently, if I'm correct, and I don't have Dexter Johnson here this morning from Legislative Council to back me up, unfortunately, but my understanding is that the only opportunity we really have here is in the federal law in terms of being able to set aside a certain amount of money for educational purposes. I don't believe there's a mechanism in state law at this time, unless I'm unaware of it. And if I am, forgive me and please correct me.
Well, the follow-up, we're talking about a tax credit for Oregon income taxes, aren't we?
Mr. Chair, Representative Barnhart, that's correct.
Yeah. Okay. Then I'm having trouble understanding what the last part of your comment, earlier comment, means. I'm sorry.
Mr. Chair, Representative Barnhart, I was understanding your question to be that you could potentially have the tax credit as it is listed here in terms of the dollar amounts, mm-hmm. but that possibly a person, an individual, could give more than that and also claim a deduction in addition to the tax credit. And that is not my intention with this legislation. I don't know that there is any way that you can give, and again, forgive me if I'm incorrect here, and please correct me, I don't know that you can give money to any of these institutions and deduct it today on your Oregon state income tax, and that's how I took your question to be, sir. And am I incorrect?
I think you can deduct.
Okay.
I think
contributions to.
I think gifts to a government agency are deductible.
Yeah, I think so.
And
okay. And I thank you for correcting me, and I do appreciate you.
Yeah.
Mr. Chair,
Representative Nolan, you have a.
Mr. Chair, I don't want to give tax advice to this committee, but my understanding is that the foundations that are included in Representative Krupp's bill, if they're organized under Internal Revenue Code 501c3 or a similar tax deductible, would be eligible for a tax deduction on both federal and Oregon, basically mirrors the federal tax code.
Right.
But I suspect it might be wise for us to get advice from Revenue or Ledge Council on the status with government agencies such as school districts, unless Janet knows.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Nolan, as a Revenue Committee staff, if there was possible to take deductions for contributions to schools currently, and it is, and that would also explain the nonprofit school, private school. We can be correct, we'll double check with them, but that was not what their response was.
A follow-up, Mr. Chair. I will point out that, as Representative Krupp has brought our attention to, the bill proposes a credit,
yes,
not a tax deduction, at least
right,
for the first $1,000 for corporate filers and $500 for married joint filers, but it's also 50% of the donation, as I read the bill. So even if you are eligible, we need to sort out the original question that Representative Barnhart raised as to is it either or, and what about the donor who makes a contribution in excess of this limit? What's the status of that surplus donation?
The difference.
Yeah. Mr. Chair. Right. Oh, go ahead. Yeah. Representative Smith?
I have a couple questions for Representative Krupp. Do you think this will spur investment through contributions to schools? Do you think that, I mean, obviously you think there's a gap there. That's why you brought this measure forth. Do you think people will automatically donate more now?
Mr. Chair, Representative Smith, yes.
Why do you think that? Excuse me, follow-up.
Follow-up.
Mr. Chair, Representative Smith, because I believe that we are a, and not to sound flippant anyway, but we are a compassionate society. We are also a wealthy society. Even though we may be heading into the throes of the dreaded recession, I think it is always proper to offer incentives to produce an end result on a voluntary basis, over and above what is currently available. And in essence, what's currently available today is paying your property taxes and your income taxes to facilitate the funding of schools. I believe there are a lot of people in Oregon who would like to give more because they feel so strongly about educational issues. And I think that this gives them an extra reason to do so, gives them an economic reason to do so. We offer tax credits in this state for a great many things. And I don't think that's bad from a policy perspective or philosophical perspective. I know there are certainly others who disagree with me on that issue, Representative, but I think it would, certainly. And I think anything we can do to encourage that ultimately benefits us.
Mr. Krupp, I'm Representative Krupp. Do you have any idea what the financial impact upon the state this will bring?
Mr. Chair, Representative Smith, no, not at this time, as no fiscal has been issued. You would, I'm assuming, would need to subsequently refer this, and at that point in time, one would be issued. If I recall, we didn't even get one last session. because the amounts changed as we were working with it on the Senate side. And I think that point, however, is well taken, because we are, as I stated, facing very difficult economic budgetary issues. Again, I think it boils down to a matter of policy. If you as a committee and we as a legislative body feel this is good policy, then we can move forward with the concept. The implementation in terms of the impact financially would need to be addressed in some form.
Representative Morissette.
Thank you. Representative Jeff, I love the concept, but I don't like the implementation of it.
The what? I couldn't hear you.
I say I like the concept, but the implementation bothers me a little bit in terms of the amount of money that it could cost. And I think the incentive is coming from the state. I mean, we're using state dollars to fund the program. I went through private schools, grade school, high school, college, and my parents paid tuition, and I was wishing at different times that we did have some assistance, and I did work my way through college, and so I understand the problem. One other point, Mr. Chair, if I may, I don't see how you could prevent someone from taking the credit and deduction of anything over that unless you put it in the law that they couldn't do it. I mean, that's going to happen, and I think it's fine. I don't have a problem with that. One question, though, is would you tell us again which schools would be affected? You mentioned non-religious schools, or religious schools were not included, but you specifically mentioned a couple of kinds of schools. Would you tell me again?
Mr. Chair, Representative Morissette, yes, I'd be happy to elaborate. This morning I pulled out the ORSs and looked up ORS 345, 505, 575, and that entire chapters deal with career, private technical, and vocational rehabilitation type institutions. It does not deal with private K through 12 schools. It does not deal with private religious schools at all. In this debate, and as a matter of policy, I chose not to go down that road because I think it is a more difficult road, number one. And number two is the constitutional question, which I mentioned previously about private religious schools. And even though I have very strong feelings about that issue, I think this is a reasonable direction for us to go at this time. And I frankly don't see anything else emerging unless the people of Oregon were to change the Constitution to allow private religious schools of any type to have the opportunity to take money from the Treasury, as our Constitution is prohibits. I don't think that's a place that we can go right now. And until the people of Oregon change their mind about that issue, this is as far as we can go, I believe. And I still think it is a valid policy direction for us to talk about, and hopefully we can make some progress here.
Representative Barnhart.
Yeah, another question, and I apologize if I'm beyond the base that you have on this kind of issue, but if I read this correctly, the first $1,000 that a married couple filing a joint return contributed to one of these programs, they would be able to get a tax credit of $500 under this bill. Now, if I understand the federal tax law, they would also be able to deduct the full $1,000 from their federal income tax return, assuming that they're in the 37% or 38% bracket, which isn't a crazy thought because lots of people are these days. They would have a total break in effect from taxes of about 88%, just adding those two numbers together. Is there something wrong with my analysis, or have I got it about right?
Mr. Chair, Representative Barnhart, you probably have it about right, knowing your quick mind and your proclivities to this issue. I have not run those figures in the manner that you prescribed them, but I'm trusting your intuition on that, sir.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair?
One moment, please, Representative. Janet has the ORS
you're referencing Representative Crupton and has a comment.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I think the confusion is that the section on private elementary and secondary schools, which is broader than what you were talking about, comes right after section on the kinds of schools you were talking about, but it does include all private nonprofit schools K through 12 in the definition of private school that's referenced in the bill. So it's broader than what you were thinking, but it comes right after some of the technical schools. But the way the bill
within Janet, within 505 through 575.
Mm-hmm. Maybe you should read it. So the definition of private school in 505 is a private elementary or secondary school operated by a person or a private agency, except as provided in 339030, which is meaning people who don't are exempt from going to school at all, offering education in pre-kindergarten, kindergarten, or grades 1 through 12, or any part thereof. So it does include private nonprofit schools.
Mr. Chair, would that include religious schools to that? I mean, yeah.
As long as they have nonprofits.
Yeah. Well, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, that's not my intention. If I need to amend that, I'm more than happy to do so. That was one of my original discussions in having this bill.
You wanted to avoid a problem, and yet perhaps.
That is correct,
yeah.
Mr. Chair, and we'd be happy to
avoid a bunch of
take
drugs.
Care of that.
Yeah. Representative Marset, did you?
No.
Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Chair?
Oh, excuse me.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair, and Representative Krupp. I appreciate your efforts on behalf of our taxpayers and certainly on behalf of our students. This bill in effect would really greatly benefit charter schools. Is that not correct?
Mr. Chair, Representative Nelson, yes.
And follow-up, please.
Follow-up.
And also, are you aware of this committee's actions as relates to the College Trust Fund? It also provides a substantial tax shelter for help to public institutions.
Mr. Chair, Representative Nelson, no, I am not.
Perhaps we should get you information on that, Mr. Chair.
Representative Nelson, are you referencing the college tuition savings plan?
Yes.
Which was passed in 1999 and just has been implemented.
Maybe we could combine.
Excuse me.
Representative Smith?
Maybe, are we going to go into a work session?
No, I think today we...
Okay, is this the proper time?
We need to work it.
Is this the proper time for me to ask a question regarding Representative Nelson's?
Yes, please.
Okay. Representative Nelson, regarding the college tuition plan, are you saying if a person participates in that, then they should be exempt from participating in what Representative Krupp is proposing?
No, Mr. Chair, Representative Smith, absolutely not. Had nothing to do with that whatsoever.
Okay.
What it had to do with was the fact that there are other programs that also, you know, bring about some tax credit, some tax shelter for individuals, you know, supplementing kids' education. And I think it's wonderful everything we can do that encourages this. And we just heard a large group of students request help for child care. I mean, there are many ways. And I think what is especially important is that this measure does not direct how the monies are used. It makes me happy to know that schools can receive these monies and be used, which is really important to me, where they see fit. And we don't know what the needs are in the communities. Now, we specified, for example, the tuition fund, you know, certain uses of those funds. And I think this is wonderful that this gives the schools, especially, the freedom to use donated monies where they really, really need them. And I want to thank you for that.
Thank you. Representative, do you want to add anything? You seem to have exhausted us in the way of questions.
Well, Mr. Chair, I think you've exhausted me.
No, you had a birthday yesterday, Representative. You're exhausted.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would, of course, love to move forward with this concept. I would be happy to discuss the issues that individual members might have in terms of any thoughts you might have. And if you'd appreciate sharing those with me, I'd be happy to try to amend those issues in the bill. Would like to move it forward, and I'll certainly leave that at the committee's and the chair's discretion.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Nelson?
Yes, Mr. Chair and Representative Crabb, would it be possible that the CPA, you probably had this in previous testimony, who conceived this concept, perhaps, you know, we don't know what we don't know about his initial thinking, and I wonder if it might be possible that he might address this issue in writing and help us fully understand where he was coming from, because I certainly respect any constituent who wants to bring about a tax credit or deduction for taxpayers that's benefiting a specific good purposes like this.
Mr. Chair, Representative Nelson, yes, that is certainly possible. I had hoped to have that particular gentleman here today, and we were unable to work out his schedule, and would certainly like to have him. Lebanon Community Schools Foundation is a foundation that was formed some time ago to deal with a very problematic school system, in that Lebanon was one of these schools that we consolidated in the state that consolidated 9 school districts and had tremendous facilities issues because of that. And really, the community got together to try to support the school district in some very economically difficult times. Some of those, they admit, are kind of their own doing from some policy issues that they've created for themselves. But also, a lot of it's as a result of consolidation. Recently, the Lebanon School District passed a $50 million bond to consolidate some schools, build new schools, and repair some severely deteriorated facilities. And to their credit, that's a huge chunk for a 4,500-student school district. However, they've made their step, and the Community Schools Foundation was founded to assist them in not only that effort, but also in providing some scholarships and I've had teachers come to me, parents come to me, and teachers, and complain about not having money for scotch tape in their rooms and so forth. And the Community Schools Foundation has been instrumental in helping with some of those issues. So there are, and I know there are many organizations like that in this state. And I think that those are good organizations that we probably should hear from on this issue. This also has some implications in terms of certainly higher education. And we hope to have some individuals here from other higher educational foundations that would also be in favor of this proposal. They were also unable to get here today, and hopefully we'll have some comments for them the next time we hear this. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Moore, Jeff, I'm very happy to hear that Lebanon did pass the bond issue. Does that mean that the Habitat for Humanity type school building is unneeded now? The bill that you had last session, too. Or do they plan to be involved in the building of the school?
Mr. Chair, Representative Morissette, no, that is still a valid concept. I actually sent letters out to all of the school districts across the state on that particular bill that we had passed last session, that very unique concept for trying to help struggling school districts deal with some of their facility issues. And really only had one superintendent show any interest in it. And my impression was that if no one will avail themselves of this law, at least in the time that I'm here because of term limits, that probably I'll make a motion to take it off the books. Because I'd rather not clutter up the statute with something that no one's going to use. However, in that time, I've actually had a couple of districts express some interest in using that particular type of scenario. So it still is a little bit in flux, but at least in terms of Lebanon, Representative, I think their needs are handled.
Thank you, Representative.
Thank you.
Could we hear from Lori Wimmer Whalen, please? You've been very patient this morning, but I guess that's part of the job.
That's right. For the record, good morning, committee members. For the record, my name is Lori Wimmer Whalen. I'm a government relations consultant for the Oregon Education Association. We are here today to respectfully oppose this bill. I guess I would say that good people can disagree about the best way to help public education. I've given you my written testimony. I guess given that Representative Krupp has expressed some willingness to delete Section 2 sub C, number 2 would be sort of a moot point. But my other three arguments, I think, still bear your consideration. First of all, the Oregon Education Association will be in front of the Revenue Committees a lot this session with respect to proposals to cut taxes, to give tax credits, subtractions, and the like, of which this is one, because we are facing a $750 million hole in the current budget for the coming biennium in order to fund core services at current service levels. We do not have it to give away. You heard prior to this bill, a bill that is a very worthy program. You all expressed great passion for wanting to support that. While it is speculative at best to say how much revenue impact this concept might have, it clearly will have some if it does do its intended purpose, which is to encourage folks to give who do not do so already, which is to say that they will then get the tax credit, which will drop the revenues of the state, which means there's less money in the pot to fund exactly the kind of programs you all just passed on to revenue prior to this bill being heard. I just don't think there's any money there to give. It doesn't matter whether the program is worth it. We just aren't in the position right now, so the Oregon Education Association stands opposed to all such tax cuts, never mind any potential worth or merit of the proposal as an idea unto itself. So that's point one. Point three, simulation of gifting. I am myself a contributor to my public school foundation for my children. I know that a lot of folks, subsequent to the passage of ballot measure 5, felt that public education was going to suffer if the dollars could not flow at the kind of levels that commensurate with need. And we've had all kinds of needs well documented, and this committee, I know, is well aware of. Increase in class size, need for teacher training, facilities, as you've just heard, upgrades and new buildings being built in high growth areas, dealing with declining enrollment. These are the critical issues in public education for K-12 that you're all grappling with. And in an ideal world, we try to find the money to fund those directly because Oregon's Constitution says that K-12 public education is the purview of the state and local governments, not private donors. And so it seems a little bit of a tail wagging the dog to take money out of the pot to encourage investment by the private sector in a public education that is the responsibility of the public. So for that reason, too, we would have some problems with the bill. And we would urge this committee not to pass it out, but if you do so, to add a referral to Ways and Means as well as to Referendum. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Representative Barnhart.
Thank you. And thank you for bringing the position of the OEA to us this morning. I appreciate it. As I understand the tax codes, and I could quite easily be wrong about this, and I asked the question of Representative Krupp that I think he agreed that if this were to pass, that a person who made a contribution within the purview of the bill would essentially save $880 on taxes out of a $1,000 contribution. If I understand the current law that we have correctly, the person in the same situation under our current law would save essentially 9% on their taxes because of that's the tax rate in Oregon for incomes at that level, and 30-some-odd percent from the federal taxes because that's what the federal tax rate is for incomes at that level, for a total of 40-some-odd percent already. So the fact is we already do allow tax contributions in effect for contributions to these kinds of entities, do we not?
Chair Backlund and Representative Barnhart, that's my understanding as well. I'm not a lawyer or a CPA, but that's how I did the math as well. And one further point to that end, All of you probably have a copy of the tax expenditure report that is produced biannually. In 1997-99, we gave away in tax expenditures, deductions, and credits, and so forth of one sort or another, about 50 cents on the dollar of taxable income. We are now up to 54 cents on a dollar that we don't collect.
Ooh, there's our budget right there. All of a sudden, the budget looks a lot better.
Other questions? Lori, well, thank you for bringing your perspective and your analysis to the committee. We appreciate your stepping forward.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I had a conversation with Mark Spiegel of the
Independent
Private School Delphin Foundation. I'm not able to say the name of his organization. He came and spoke to us on the FDR3 bill, and he was not able to come. He was going to try to find someone to come today, but they do support the bill. Just wanted that to be on record, and I will get the name of the association to follow.
Well, thank you very much, and the committee's adjourned.
Yep.
One time before we get here in the morning.